Happy to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and really pleased to welcome Jennifer Chevarini to the microphones today. She is the author of the Elm Creek Quilt Series, which includes 11 novels and two collections of quilt projects. And we're going to be talking with her about her latest book, The New Year's Quilt. And in that book, the spotlight falls on master quilter Sylvia Bergstrom and her new husband, Andrew. And I tell you what, I'm having a lot of fun reading it. I haven't finished it yet, but I'm on my way, and I definitely will finish it before the week is out. I'm pretty sure of that. If you'd like to talk with her about this book or about her other books or maybe about quilting, I'm hoping that you will join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, and you can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Give us a call, send us an email. We'll be happy to get your input. Jennifer, welcome back. Nice to have you with us again.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
It's the 11th, right?
I think so, yes. I've lost count.
Well, Sylvia, who is the main player in this one, was kind of a bit player, I think, in your last book, The Quilter's Homecoming. Is she a favorite character of yours? You like her?
Oh, yes. She's definitely my favorite character. I really consider her to be the heart and soul of the series. But that doesn't mean that she's going to be the focus of every book. In my last novel, we only saw Sylvia as a child.
Right,
she was about 4 years old,
mm-hmm.
and she was there to protest the marriage of her favorite cousin, Elizabeth. Elizabeth was the main character of that story, and most of the action took place out in Southern California in the 1920s.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. But now Sylvia takes center stage with Andrew.
That's right. She and her new husband are the focus of this new story. And readers might be surprised to hear me calling Andrew her new husband. Well, this is another one of those books that I'm taking out of sequence. This book actually, The New Year's Quilt, actually takes place immediately following my fifth novel, The Quilter's Legacy. And mm-hmm. My readers who have been with me a long time are familiar with me sometimes jumping around in time. And I do have some very good reasons for doing that.
Why do you do that?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. One, when I first started writing my first novel, The Quilter's Apprentice, I had no idea that it was going to be the first book in a series. I thought I would write one story about this art form that I love, quilting, and then I assumed I'd go on to other things, as most writers do, but readers wanted more about these characters and about this community. But since I didn't know I'd be writing a series, I skipped a lot of years between mm-hmm. those initial books. And I know Sylvia's pushing 107 by now. So sometimes I like to go back in time so that I'm not pushing the chronology too fast forward so that eventually I'll have to get rid of Sylvia. I've been told that I absolutely am not permitted to get rid of Sylvia. And here I thought they were my books. But I've been told that I'm not allowed to get rid of Sylvia, so readers have to be flexible and let me fill in some of those gaps in the past.
Well, it must be kind of fun to jump back and forth like that.
Oh, it is. I think it's a lot of fun. And it really keeps this series very fresh and enjoyable and fun for me to write, because sometimes I can bring in a whole new group of characters, as I've done in Cross Country Quilters and Circle of mm-hmm. Quilters. And then I get to develop these new people and find out how they came to the quilting art and why they're so passionate about it. And then other times I will focus on one of Sylvia's ancestors. Mm-hmm. And then I get to learn about a new historical era and what quilting techniques and styles were popular during that time. So it's a lot of fun for me to do that research and tell my readers all about those eras and bring those quilters mm-hmm. to life. And then sometimes I like, as I did in The Quilter Homecoming, I like to take a secondary character from an earlier book, someone who really piqued my curiosity and someone I found very intriguing, and let them take center stage and tell mm-hmm. their story. And that keeps the series very fun and fresh for me to write. And I think that translates into a more enjoyable book for mm-hmm. my audience to read, because if I had been stuck with the traditional, straightforward, strictly linear series format, I would have lost interest several books ago. Yeah, but this way, it's very fresh and fun, and each book can stand on its own, and I get to answer all those questions about those secondary characters that if I had followed the traditional series format, I wouldn't be able to do.
Yeah. And certainly the proof is in the sales of your book. I mean, you sell a lot of books, although I'm sure there are some readers who would prefer the linear approach.
Well, that's true. And they've let me know that. You know, I hear that sometimes, but they want to know what's going to happen with this the contemporary group of quilters that they've come to know and love. But I do hear from a lot of other readers that they love the history. They love the historical books. And I can throw some adventure into those stories, too. And then, of course, in some novels, I try to bridge the contemporary era with the historical era. And then there's a whole crowd of readers who like it when I do it that way. So my solution is to try to please everyone and sometimes alternate, have one historical novel and then have a contemporary, because I'm a middle child and I like to please everyone.
Okay.
So I try to do that by having a variety of different styles.
Well, we have some callers online. Again, if you'd like to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890. Give us a call or email us at talk@wpr.org. Marilyn in Madison is up. Marilyn, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Well, I hope that you can answer a question for me. One of the books was read maybe last year on Chapter a Day, and I think it was Jim Fleming who was reading it. Any idea which book that was? It just was a wonderful book.
Oh, thank you. That was The Christmas Quilt, and it was my first holiday story. It came out in fall of 2005, and that's when it was read on Chapter Day, and I'm so glad you enjoyed it.
Thanks so much. I'm going to get another copy for another friend. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Do you get that a little bit sometimes from people? And what was that book you wrote a couple of years ago?
Yeah, and then sometimes I have to think about it, too, because, you know, there have been so many, and I've been writing them for 10 years. Well, more than 10 years I've been writing them now. So it's funny, sometimes when I'm writing a new novel, I actually have to go back and research my earlier books to make sure I'm getting families correct and the names of the children correct.
Well, what are the historical events that play out in the New Year's quilt?
Well, I focus on a lot of the New Year's traditions celebrated by various members of Sylvia's family. We hear from her grandma about the traditions that she celebrated as a young girl in Scotland. And we hear some stories from her mother's life in New York when she was a young girl. She has an adventure when she slips out of the house when everybody else is allowed to go to a party. She's supposed to be safe at home in bed, but it's the turn of the past century, and she wasn't going to stay at home in the nursery and watch it through the window. And so she actually got involved in a riot that took place in Manhattan, which is an actual historical event. And Sylvia is absolutely shocked to hear that her perfect saintly mother was ever naughty. So it gives her a new insight into this woman that she only knows as a very loving and nurturing mother.
And you have to do quite a bit of research, I assume, for even that little piece of the book. Probably required a fair amount of work.
Oh, it definitely does. But I'm very fortunate that the Wisconsin Historical Society is right here in Madison, and they have wonderful, wonderful resources. And I spend time over there perusing their collections and hunting down details. And it's definitely an organization that's worth our support.
And, you know, I don't quilt and really don't have any family members who quilt. So I wondered the first time I picked up one of your books, am I going to enjoy this at all? But actually, you don't really have to be a quilter to.
No, I don't think so. When I wrote the first book, I was focusing on two different audiences that I thought might come to the book someday. And one of those groups was, of course, quilters, because I thought that they would appreciate seeing contemporary quilting portrayed in a way that was free of a lot of the stereotypes surrounding quilting, such as it's an old-fashioned craft that people practiced in the olden days out of necessity, but nobody does it anymore. Well, I wanted to dispel that myth for some people who think that that's still out there. But I also wanted to let non-quilters see why contemporary quilters and quilt lovers who enjoy historical quilts and antique quilts, why we're so passionate about it, why it's so important to us, and why sometimes it borders on obsession. So I did try to write the book so that non-quilters could enjoy them. And sometimes it's a fine balancing act. I want to include enough quilting detail so that non-quilters can visualize what's going on and they can understand what goes into creating a quilt. But I didn't want to burden quilters with too much detail that they were already familiar with. So sometimes there's some inside jokes that non-quilters might not detect, but I do try to make the books accessible to quilters and non-quilters alike.
Why are people so passionate about quilting who are in it?
Well, it's such a wonderful way to express your creativity. There's an endless variety of fabrics and colors and styles and quilt patterns, both traditional and more innovative. There really are maybe two separate quilting camps in quilting, contemporary quilting, and one focuses more on traditional patterns, the block patterns that have been passed down for generations, and then others are more innovative and they work in more abstract fashions, but there is a lot of overlap, and people from both traditional quilters and contemporary art quilters appreciate the work done by both groups. And there is a lot of back and forth between the two different styles. But I think in addition to just being a wonderful way to express your creativity, a wonderful artistic outlet, there's a very strong social component to quilting. We call it the quilting community or the quilt world, but quilting community is the term most people use. Because I think you'll find that quilters are wonderful about welcoming newcomers to the craft. They're very eager to share their knowledge, very helpful about offering solutions and sewing tricks that newcomers might not know. So it's a very accessible art form. And beginners will find that, you know, even the least attractive quilt can still keep you warm. So it's very hard to go wrong. And you'll find that there's a wonderful social element. People get together to quilt on group projects. They use quilts for fundraisers or to commemorate special occasions in the community. I saw a special quilt outside in your hallway when I was walking into the studio, and it looked like you had different quilt blocks representing a lot of the different shows that you have here on Wisconsin That's Public right. Radio. So it's something that it has a lot of symbolism for us. It's a wonderful creative outlet. And then it also brings people together to work on a common goal. And I think, although it's the beauty of the patterns might be what draws someone to quilting, it's that social element that keeps people interested and keeps them involved.
A lot of people do this a quilt together, as you say.
That's right. They'll get together with their quilting guild or their quilting bee and swap stories and share advice and patterns, and it's a lot of fun.
Jennifer Cheverini, our guest today from Madison. She's the author of the Elm Creek Quilt series. You know, that's hard to say. Elm Creek Quilt.
Yeah, you see, again, I didn't know that I would be saying, because in the first novel, Elm Creek Quilts, that's the last three words of the book. I didn't know I was going to be using that in all these other books, or I would have picked something much easier to say. So I'm sorry about that.
Well, your latest book is The New Year's Quilt. And if you have a question or a comment for Jennifer as we move along today, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, it's 263-1890, 263-1890, or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Jennifer Cheverini about quilting and about her latest book, The New Year's Quilt. Really pleased to have her with us again. If you want to join in, the number 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison, it's 263-1890, 263-1890. You write about, one of the quilts you write about in your book is connected with a bed and breakfast, I believe. And I was trying to envision this quilt as a diamond pattern. What's the history of that or the story behind that, picking that particular quilt for you?
Well, it was inspired by a quilt that I saw at a real bed and breakfast, or pictures of a quilt that I saw. And it was, there's a bed and breakfast that Sylvia and Andrew stay at in Manhattan to celebrate their honeymoon. And the real bed and breakfast is in Manhattan, and it's in the same location as the story, but it's the 1864 house. Now, I changed the time a little bit because I wanted it to be more in the Civil War era and leading up to the Civil War. So I did take that that liberty with reality. But it was a quilt that I saw in a photograph spread over a bed, and it's made of many, many small triangles with diamond stars in the center of each one. And I thought of all of the meticulous, some might say tedious, handwork that would have to go into sewing all of those tiny triangles together. And then I started thinking about who would have made a quilt like this. It's so beautiful. The colors are so striking. But sitting there and sewing all those triangles together, what was she thinking when she worked upon this? Was she waiting for news from someone who had gone off to fight in the Civil War? Was she contemplating the future that her children might have if the nation stayed divided? And the more I thought about her, the more I began to, that, you know, that unknown quilt maker, mm-hmm. the more it worked into the story, and it became something that Sylvia began to wonder about too, and her friend who runs the bed and breakfast. It compelled her to do more research about the owners of that Manhattan brownstone.
And quilts, quilts that are 100 years old or 150 years old are still, people take very good care of something like that, don't they?
Well, they should, and a lot of people do, but a lot of these quilters who made these quilts hundreds of years ago never considered themselves artists, even folk artists. They were making something pretty to comfort their friend, comfort their family, keep everyone warm at night. And of course, sometimes they would put a lot of extra attention and lavish their best handiwork upon a special quilt, either their wedding quilt or the special quilt that would be only brought out for company. But these quilts were made to be used, and they were used and loved and washed in not always the gentlest of soaps. And so a lot of them just aren't around anymore. So if you have some of those heirloom quilts in your family, do take care of them, because they are more precious than you might realize.
Yeah, I would certainly think so. Do you? The quilts of 100, 200 years ago versus the quilts of today, do they reflect trends in society? Can you say that, quilts?
Oh, they always have. You can find museum pieces of quilts that were made to celebrate certain victories in the Revolutionary War. Or you'll see quilts that have strong liberty themes that were made at the end of the 18th century. So quilters have always used quilting to express themselves and express their feelings, their patriotism, sometimes their grief. There were a lot of quilts made as memorials to remember and to mourn for a loved one. So it's something that's being done today, and it's something that was done a long time ago. And sometimes that's because quilting was the only art form, or one of the very few art forms, that was accepted for women to participate in. A woman who had her household responsibilities sometimes would be frowned upon if she decided to try to paint, unless it was watercolors or sculpt. Mm-hmm. Those avenues mm-hmm. were closed very often to women. But quilting, because it was a domestic art, was tolerated and encouraged. And so that's the voice, that's where a lot of women express their voice. They express their political views. And that's something that we still do today, even though there are so many other art forms that are available.
Yeah. Let's take a call. Karen in Rolling Stone, Minnesota. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thank you. We enjoy your show so much, and I'm really enjoying this one. Jennifer, I've read almost all of your books. I called because I have a question about a quilt top of my grandma's that I have. She made this sometime in the late Depression or during the Second World War. I have two. One is a wool sample, suit samples that she got and sewed together, and I have that one. But this other one is just the top,
mm-hmm.
and it's not what I would call carefully pieced. I know she was in a hurry. She was using up scraps from pajamas she had made and that kind of thing, but I love it very much because it's from my grandma. And I'm wondering, what's the best way for me to keep that? I would love to actually go ahead and make it into a quilt, but I don't know if that's what I should really be doing with it, because I want my grandchildren to see it and
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm. And it's such a wonderful, I wonder how you know that she was in a hurry when she did it. Was that
because my grandma was an incredible stitcher?
Okay.
She made suits, she made coats, and they were so beautifully made. And she lived with us for a number of years in her very late years, and she would sew all our clothes for myself and my four sisters. She sewed all my mom's and my uncle's clothes until they were adults.
So she knew what she was doing.
She knew what she was doing, and these are like the points don't all match and that kind of thing, and that's not how my grandma would sew, and I think this was just very utilitarian kind of work to get, let's get it put together, and then she never actually made it into a quilt.
See, now this, there's a story there, because if she rushed to finish the top, why didn't she ever have it quilted? See, now I could get a whole book right out of that idea, so thank you for that.
Yeah.
But I wonder, are you sure that she made it?
I am.
You are sure she made it?
I am.
Is it possible that she made it early in her sewing life, and so perhaps her skills weren't quite what they were later on?
No, I don't think so, because it's fabrics from that time.
Uh-huh.
And my mom remembers, some pajamas. Oh, that was a pair of pajamas. And
so she couldn't have had that fabric earlier.
I don't think so, because and I know she was in a hurry, because during the Depression, my grandpa was steel worker, and he had to travel all around the country to get work, and so their family was in Chicago staying with my mom's grandma, and my grandma was really supporting their family by her sewing. She used to sew for some very wealthy women in Chicago, and so I'm sure she was putting her time towards sewing for those clients of hers.
Well, most archivists who maintain or curators of quilt museums encourage people to leave unquilted tops unquilted. That is what most people encourage you to do. But, of course, it is your quilt. And if you want to see it over the bed, if you want to be able to use it, you might want to think about what your grandmother would have liked. You know, she might have, a lot of quilt makers made these quilts just so that they would be used and they would offer warmth and comfort to their loved ones. So you need to ask yourself, well, is this something I want to preserve as a museum piece, or is it something that I want to be able to use and I want my children to be able to use? That's a decision that only you can make. But if you think that if the quilt is fragile, if you see that some of the fabrics are starting to fall apart, I would encourage you not to have it quilted, just because the physical demands of quilting might cause it to deteriorate even more. But if either way, I would encourage you to keep it out of the sunlight so that the fabrics don't fade. And then when you're folding it, take it out every once in a while and refold it along different lines so that the same threads don't get the stress and don't get the creases. And it's also a good idea to fold it on the bias. We're used to folding things in nice, neat, horizontal and then vertical, straight lines. Yeah. But if you fold things on the bias, then it helps reduce the stress on that one thread all the way across the quilt.
Oh, yeah, that's very interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, you might want to give that a try. But it's such a wonderful heirloom that you have. It's not only handiwork of your grandmother's, but it's also this wonderful catalog of fabrics that were used by members of your family. And one thing I would encourage you to do, whether you leave the quilt top as it is or have it quilted, I would encourage you to write a history of this quilt. Write down who made it, where you believe she worked on it, maybe when you think she worked on it. And if you can identify any of the individual scraps as being my sister's pajamas or grandpa's suit, that would be a wonderful record for your descendants and their descendants to carry into the future.
Oh, those are wonderful ideas. I want to mention one other thing. A number of years ago, I had the good fortune to direct a show called Quilters, which is a musical based on diaries from women who traveled west during the pioneer days. And that's really what got me interested in quilting.
Oh, wonderful.
If any of the listeners have a chance ever to see that show, it's wonderful. It's seven women, and they present many, many different actual real people in that show. And each scene in the show is developed around a particular quilt square. But I want to thank you so much for talking with me, and also for the writing that you've done.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Karen, for calling.
Right.
Yeah, appreciate the call very much. Wow, that's, yeah, the I really enjoyed your comments about writing the history of this town, because that could be very valuable Karen's descendants.
Oh, yes. I'm sure that anybody who has a quilt that grandma or great-grandma worked on wished that they had that document. Well, it's up to us to create that history for future generations. So.
Yeah. Let's go to Kim in River Falls next. Hi, Kim. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I don't know exactly all what the show is about because I just turned you on, but I've been just talking to someone about quilting today in my shop, and I do quilt. But I have a question about using cotton as opposed to a polyester thread when you're quilting. Is one preferable to the other, and why? Because I know poly is so much stronger, and I use poly when I thread or when I make the top.
Well, you're going to get different answers depending upon which quilter you ask. Some people say that the cotton is too strong and it might cut the other threads. And other people say, no, don't worry about it. Cotton has been used forever, and look how nicely these quilts are holding up. So unfortunately, I can't give you a definitive answer on that. The best suggestion I can make is to try both kinds of thread on small sample quilts. Maybe make a block and then just quilt that individual block so that you're not doing it over a whole quilt and then you realize, oh, you should have gone the other way.
Mm-hmm.
But try both and see which one you prefer to work with. Some quilters don't care. Some quilters have a very clear preference for one or the other. And it's up to you to decide which one it is that you prefer.
Okay, now, isn't the poly supposed to be the stronger thread?
I could be getting that mixed up. It's possible.
Okay,
well, I appreciate that. I'm going to order thread for people through my shop, and so I was going to go to a quilt club and, you know, bring them the thread board and see what they wanted. So I thought, well, I should talk to someone who knows more than me.
Well, solicit advice from a lot of different quilters and collect the opinions, and you might decide that you want to go one way or the other.
Thanks very much for calling, Kim. Appreciate it. We're talking with Jennifer Cheverini today from Madison, author of the Elm Creek Quilt Series. Her latest is a seasonal book. It's called The New Year's Quilt. And there the spotlight falls on master quilter Sylvia Bergstrom and her new husband, Andrew, as they set off on their honeymoon following a Christmas Eve wedding. Catches a lot of people by surprise in the book. So, if you have a question about quilting, as we've had a few of those, or a question about Jennifer's 11-novel series, give us a call. The number 1-800-642-1234. If you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, and you can email us at talk@wpr.org. This is one of the, I guess you could say, seasonal books.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the second one, isn't it, that you've done?
Yes, that's right. In the fall of 2005, I wrote the Christmas quilt,
which
another caller referred to. And readers enjoyed getting more than one book a year from me.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to see if we could try to do it again. So that was the origin of the New Year's quilt.
So this is something you're probably going to be doing down the road, too.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. I'm open to suggestions for which holiday to do next. I'm leaning towards Arbor Day, but, you know, Flag Day might be a good choice.
Yeah, 4th of July.
4th of July, you never know.
You've got several years worth of
Yes, that's right, even if I just focus on the holidays.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's take some more calls. Rose in West Bend will give you a chance next. And Rose, hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. How exciting. As a quilter, these are the kinds of shows I truly enjoy and love. I would like to just respond to the lady with the quilt top, if I might.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
Number one, if she wants to preserve it and look at it, and she's concerned that the fabric is starting to fray and maybe the seams might be coming apart, they make wonderful restoration materials that she could back the top with without quilting it, which would help to preserve the integrity of both the fabric and the seams, but would allow her to look at it and talk to her children about it and even pass it on to them. She might just go to a quilt shop and ask, what sort of fabrics are you using for restoration purposes, and can I back the quilt with this without quilting it, just as a way of protecting it.
That's an excellent suggestion.
And I also think if you can avoid folding quilts, if you can roll them instead on a tube and preserve them that way or a top, you probably do the fabric a great service because you don't have the folds and the bends where the fabric is going to break. I know it's more difficult to store them that way.
That's true.
But if you got something that's really valuable, that's important.
Right. And you can probably find space for it somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know,
around a roll.
I have even done multiple layers on a bed
mm-hmm.
where they're lying flat so that you're not putting stress anywhere on the quilt.
Yeah.
And for those of you who have quilts but are not quilters, some do-nots. Don't ever take it to a dry cleaner unless you have no other option. Never. And also, never store it in plastic. That quilt needs to breathe. If you must fold it and you must put it away, I would suggest muslin after it's been washed. Large pillowcases will work okay. Keep it out of plastic. Plastic does not breathe, and quilts are living things. They have to breathe.
Wow. Well, Rose, what do you think of those comments?
Oh, I think she's right on the mark. Very sound advice.
And for you, since there are so many subcategories of quilting, you can write a new book every year for the rest of your life and never run out of fodder.
Well, that's kind of the plan, although, you know, my readers have a lot to do with that. As long as they're interested in still reading my books, then I plan to continue writing them.
There are so many exciting genres. There's the Hawaiian quilting. You could...
You've been to my website, haven't you?
Yeah. And the Indian potlatch quilts that sometimes they're given as treasures for almost every occasion. There are star quilts. There are the puntas. There are the handyman quilts. There are the quilts that were made in Canada. There are Baltimore album quilts. There are the Afro-American quilts. It just goes on. There are the Hmong quilts. There are the Amish quilts. You know, there are the Confederate South quilts. I mean, my dear, I'll read every one of those books.
Oh, wonderful.
Thank
well,
you,
I'll be
Rose.
Sure to write them for you.
Thank you, Rose. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, a passionate person there, as many
And,
are.
You know, so many quilters share that passion.
And it's true, as you know, it's just not something that exists here in the United States. The quilting is really a worldwide phenomenon, isn't it?
It really is. It's very popular in the UK. It's popular in Europe. It's very popular in Japan. They have their own unique style and mm-hmm. Are just doing wonderful work and winning all kinds of quilting competitions. And New Zealand and Australia, it's really a wonderful worldwide pastime.
Thanks again, Rose. I want to give Ruth a chance. Ruth in Milwaukee, hello to you. Thanks for calling.
Hi, this is Ruth. And I am having wonderful memories of being a college student and finding a quilt top that was started and not finished in my grandmother's basement. It was a Lone Star pattern, and it had all but the tips done. There were like four rows at the tips that weren't done, and I brought it upstairs. And I think, Grandma, this is beautiful. Why didn't you finish this? And as you know, stories go with these quilting sewing scenarios. It turns out she had pieced together flour sacking right after World War One finished when she married a returning vet who had what we call post-traumatic stress disorder today.
Mm-hmm.
They called it shell shock back then.
Mm-hmm.
And they lived in Minnesota, and they were sent south of the Twin Cities by the government to a farm plot to become chicken farmers so that Grandpa Gordy could find peace and quiet and not be shell-shocked, have that shell-shock response from, back in those days, the cars would backfire
right.
and such.
Mm-hmm.
And he was suffering along with a lot of others. And a lot of guys got sent out to the country. So he got sent out to the country with his wife, my grandma. And grandma had not a lot to do.
Mm-hmm.
So she started quilting.
She pieced together these little diamonds from feed sacks
mm-hmm.
and flour sacks.
Oh, and I bet she ran out.
I'll tell you when she ran out. She was married to Grandpa Gordy for 7 years, and then suddenly she had three children in 3 years, and she ran out of time.
Right.
Oh.
So that was part of the story of how that quilt was unfinished.
Yeah, well, those feed sacks are very prized by collectors and quilt makers even today. You'll see booths of them set up at big quilt shows, and people are trying to buy them online because feed and flour and things like that were sold in printed calico, printed cotton bags. And after you used up what was inside, you could wash it, and then the quilt makers could use that fabric and not let anything go to waste. And there are quilters who like to keep that tradition alive even today by tracking down some of these authentic feed sacks and saving some of the swatches for their own personal records, and then making their own quilts as their grandmothers or great-grandmothers on the farms might have done.
Hmm. Yes, I never knew what the phrase "I could make a dress out of a feed sack" was until I found my grandmother's quilt.
Now it all makes sense.
Oh, it does. And there was many a dress or a shirt mm-hmm. made out of those old feed sacks. No doubt about it. Thanks for that story, Ruth. Appreciate it very much. I want to give Mary a chance to get on, too. Mary in Chippewa Falls, hi to you.
Hello. See, I have a question. I've got an old quilt that's kind of different. And I'd like to know how to display it. My great aunt Tilly made it, and it was maybe in the late 1800s. And what happened is she married a man who took her out west to a sod house, you know, just a mm-hmm. sod house, no trees, nothing, you know, on the plain, just a sod house, and then he left her there. And he'd only come back maybe, you know, once every couple of weeks. She had no one to talk to, nothing to look at, nothing to do.
That poor woman.
And she was a seamstress and a hat maker. So her friends, he would give her mail.
Oh, that's good.
Her friends and people from, and her relative from France and from Wisconsin here, sent her, in their letters, they sent her little pieces of beautiful silk, just gorgeous silk, and thread and a couple needles. And she made this quilt using parts of the letters for backing, and then she folded the silk around the outside, around that square.
Mm-hmm.
And then she, and that was, because she had such little material, she wanted to let it make it go. You know, mm-hmm. the harder it was to do, the better. So I've got this quilt, and it's never finished because her mother finally sent someone to come and get her out there, and she got a divorce.
Well, I don't blame her.
No.
But she couldn't live anywhere because she went into a different town. But then a divorce, especially in a Catholic family, it was so awful.
Right.
And she set up a hat-making store, and the women wouldn't come as soon as they found out she was divorced, and
oh,
the men would
shame.
Come around at night and bother her.
Oh, no.
So she had to move. Well, she ended up in my grandmother's house. That was her sister. And that's why I have it, because I'm mm-hmm. in that house.
It sounds to me like you're describing English paper piecing. It's hard to know without actually looking at it. But if you're concerned about how to display it and how to take best care of it, I would encourage you to find a local quilt shop and take it on in and show it to them and get their advice, because they can see it. And silk is something that you want to take special care of. And they might be able to recommend a quilt appraiser in your area who could really give the quilt a good looking over. Someone who has been trained by the American Quilters Society or the National Quilters Association would be a good bet. But having someone really with the expertise who can look at that particular quilt, because it's hard to really say without looking at it. Mm-hmm. But I would encourage you to take it to an expert who can give you their advice.
And good luck. Thank you very much. And Jennifer, thank you so much. You're going to be in Oshkosh next week for a book signing, are you not?
I'll be at the Oshkosh Public Library on Thursday, and I'll be there at 7 p.m. ready to talk to readers and hear more of their wonderful quilting stories.
So Oshkosh next week.
Yes. Thursday, 7 p.m., Oshkosh Public Library. And more information is available on my website.
And your website is?
Elmcreek.net.
Elmcreek.net. Go to that website. Jennifer, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to finishing your book.
Good, and I hope I didn't spoil the ending for you.
No, you didn't. Jennifer Cheverini, our guest, author of the Elm Creek Quilt Series, and the latest is out there right now, the New Year's Quilt. So pick up a copy and take a look at it. Really pleased to have her with us today. Coming up, we're going to be talking about family meals, and TV or no TV with Sue Nitzky. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.